"You're right, Dad," said the gaffer. "Not that the Brandybucks of Buckland live in the old forest, but they're a queer breed, seemingly. They fool about with boats on that big river, and that isn't natural." A long-expected party. In this episode of the Grey Company podcast, we have a special guest joining us here in between the finale of the Angmar Awakened cycle and the beginning of the Dream Chaser cycle. How has the game progressed with the most recent cycle? What do we have to look forward to besides wonderful, wonderful boats? Join us on this episode of the Grey Company podcast.
It is episode 36 of the Grey Company podcast. I'm Derek. Today on the show, we have an extra special guest who we'll be interviewing in the latter half of the show. He is co-lead developer of the game and friend of the show, Matt Newman. We'll get to him in just a minute. Before that, we're going to talk about the state of the game for us and our impressions of the Angmar Awakened cycle now that it's over. Dan, how are you and how? What is your state of the game at present?
Oh, man, I'm well. It's been busy. We just moved into a house, so I've been just clinging on to my Thursday night, Lord of the Rings night, is kind of like a life raft amid, yeah, you know, getting moved and all that. But it's been fun. I'm really excited to actually try out the new cycle once it comes out in our group, because I feel like everyone else in the group is sick of me bringing. You know, Angmar Awakened. I've really been enjoying it, but I feel like everyone else is ready for new stuff. Mm-hmm. Because that's been kind of our go-to.
Made him play Carn Doom over and over again until you beat?
No, it? I'm not that mean. But we'll get into it later. But I'm just a huge fan of Across the Edmores, and it's such a great one to bring to the weekly game night. So
cool.
I'm sure everyone will be excited to go do some seafaring ones now.
Definitely. Yeah, a bit of a jump from the wastes of Eriador to the bright blue sea. It'll be fun. Ian, how are you, sir? And what have you been up to with the game of late?
I'm good. Just, yeah, similarly busy. But whenever it's kind of this in-between period between one cycle and the next, it's partially like taking some time to decompress, especially after those battles with Thardier and laying in the fetal position. I took some time to recuperate. But it's also a chance to catch up on stuff, because there's so many nightmare decks out now, and I feel like I'm really behind. So I've been plugging through the nightmare quests, but then it's been so long that I forgot what nightmare quests actually beat. So now I'm kind of just doing a progression in order and doing that kind of thing, which is fun, and looking forward to the Grey Havens. Mm-hmm. But I guess while we're talking about state of the game, we should mention the newest FAQ that came out, because there were basically two main changes, and I guess I'll just say it's generated a fair bit of discussion in the community. So, what are you guys' thoughts on the... I think Love of Tales, the change to that is fairly uncontroversial, I'd say. Like, it fed some really broken decks. Mm-hmm. But the Horn of Gondor change from generating a resource from leaving play to now being destroyed. So, yeah, what do you guys think?
I think it was a good change. The one thing that I hope that we get some other attachment that is Rohan friendly. Cause I get it from a mechanic standpoint, that having that be based on leave play with some of the tricks you can do now is it's too big of a resource generator. And it also didn't really make sense thematically that it worked better for Sylvan and Rohan than it did for Gondor. But it does, like, the fact that that has been rectified now makes me hope that in the future we see something where Rohan can actually benefit from the discard effects.
Yeah.
That's kind of my take on it. But honestly, I think both changes make complete sense. I mean, I never played any of the broken infinite combo, infinite resource decks, and I think it's good to clean stuff like that up. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, I agree. I'm being someone who has neither the time nor the interest in those kinds of loopy decks. I get a little bit disappointed, because I really like swimming in resources when you're playing Horn with a Sylvan or a Rohan deck.
Oh yeah.
But I definitely see the bigger picture, and it'll just take some adjusting too. But I think definitely in light of the brokenness of the card, it was a good change because we don't want abuse. We want to be nice to our cards.
Yeah, I think kind of the opposing viewpoint that I've seen is people being, I guess, concerned or upset because they don't play those combo-y decks like you're saying, Derek.
Yeah.
And then these errata come along and they feel like they're getting punished, quote-unquote, for what other players are doing to these decks with these kind of broken combos. I kind of come at it from the opposite perspective. And I think this is kind of a divide that's always going to exist in the community. And I think as long as we just accept that, it'll be fine. But sure. I come from the perspective of when there's broken combos in the game, it really bugs me. And even if I don't play them, I'm not sure why it bugs me so much. But I kind of don't like the philosophy of, well, if it's broken, just don't play it. Like for me, it kind of ruins the integrity of the game a bit when there's these broken combos that it... I don't know. For some reason, it makes me feel like it trivializes it, that there's a way to play the game without actually playing it. Mm-hmm. And so I like these kind of errata that clean that up. And the Horn of Gondor is less powerful now, yes, but it's still useful. It's not like it got completely smashed. Right. And I think it makes sense in both the terms of theme and gameplay now. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah. And it seems vaguely more thematic, right? Because the Horn of Gondor to me is always about sacrifice because of Boromir. Yeah, so now you actually have to die for it to trigger.
Yeah.
And just to be clear, like I actually am not going to miss it in that sense of like exactly what Derek just said. I mean, it makes sense. It is the Horn of Gondor. It's Boromir's horn. There's like an iconic moment where it really plays a part in the narrative, so I think it's good that it's not really going to be a staple of Rohan or Sylvan decks anymore. It just, to me, points out that I hope that Rohan, you know, in addition to Santa Claus, gets some other benefit to be able to get some of those allies out, right? Because they can be a bit expensive, and that was one of the nice things that it did fill that role in that archetype, was you discard your various spirit allies, or, you know, that have their discard for effect. And then you can kind of recoup some of that money. So I'm just hoping that that niche gets filled with something else that's probably a little bit more balanced. Mm-hmm. But
Well, keep an eye on social media for Matthew's response to that question. Matthew couldn't be with us today. He's out in Tunisia hunting down religious artifacts. but he'll be back next time. So today on the show, we wanted to take some time to discuss Angmar Awakened as a cycle now that it has closed. And we want to discuss the Dream Chaser cycle as it is just now beginning to ramp up and see release. So we're going to begin things by discussing the beginning. We're going to go back to the future and talk about the beginning of the Angmar Awakened cycle and what we really expected from it up front. So to get things started for myself, I was just expecting Rangers. I didn't really care what the quests were or what other archetypes were going to get a boost. I just knew I was going to get some badass Rangers to play with. And that was enough for me. And it began with Tactics Aragorn getting spoiled fairly early on. So did you guys have high hopes going in for the Rangers? Or were you like me where you kind of said, I don't care what they do. I just want the Rangers in my deck.
For me, yeah, I was definitely excited for the Dúnedain to be a thing. Like anytime a new trait is introduced, it's exciting because I'm a player who loves deck building. So having something new to play with. And, you know, we are the great company, so the idea of actually a great company deck was exciting for sure. But as far as specific expectations, nothing really. Just really wanting Dúnedain to get to a place where you could run a Dúnedain deck by itself and it be successful.
Yeah, that was... I guess I'm just going to echo kind of what you guys are saying. Is I was specifically looking forward to Halberad, and he did not disappoint. Mm-hmm. I like that he's kind of subtle in the way he fits in, but once you use him, you realize he's quite powerful in combination with all the other Dúnedain cards and just, you know, engagement strategies, and there's lots of cool tricks you can do. But it's nice to actually be able to make a full-fledged Grey Company deck and not necessarily be stomping on some of the other decks that are out there. And then now with Noldor coming up in this cycle as well, it's cool that you kind of have the whole, you know, Dúnedain and Imladris, you know, the Noldor of Elrond's household. This is going to be even more cool decks. I mean, I think Arwen points to some interesting crossover between the two archetypes, I guess is what's exciting for me.
So, Dan, you mentioned the Noldor, how they're going to get beefed up with the Grey Havens. We did see the beginnings of the archetype this cycle. A fair chunk of Noldor cards were released that play off this discard ability. So let's talk about that now. Have you guys enjoyed the Noldor card so far in that mechanic? And
I think enjoy would be an understatement. Aristor is so much fun to play. The first deck that I made with him was kind of silly in that it wasn't necessarily thematically pure, but I was just like, the deck building, and this is something that I'm sure Ian can relate to as well, like as someone who loves to build new and different decks, the deck building opportunities of that level of card draw, like basically an absurd level of card draw, is fantastic, right? Because I the first deck I built with him had Baragond as one of my heroes, and I threw in every single armor, like one copy of every single armor and weapon that I could think of. And basically, he just, by the end of the game, when I'm running that deck, Baragond is loaded with everything you could possibly imagine.
So
it's all, and it's all free, right? Because that was one of the things that's critical with him is since you're discarding your hand, I want to make sure that everything I draw I can play. So, you know, like the helm and the spear and the shield and, you know, just whatever. And then a bunch of one cost cool little supplemental tactic stuff that I know I'm always going to be able to drop when I draw it. And then now if I've slotted Arwen into that deck, so you can even put in like two cost stuff. And it's just so much fun to be like, I'm going to draw an absolute ton of cards every turn and dump all of them as attachments on my heroes. It's basically the strategy of the deck. And it's not a Noldor deck by any means, but it's just so much fun to have like, it's like a kid in a candy store where you just throw any one and two cost attachment you want. And like stuff like Miravor is really fun in that deck. Cause I'm basically Santa Claus in that deck. Cause I'll just give it out and be like, hey, you get a Limbus, you get a Miravor. I run Keeping Count in that deck, and that card is amazing. Like it's so funny that I'm even one of the people that hated against that card, but I run three copies of it in that deck. And every single time I played that deck, Keeping Count has actually worked because you draw through so much of the deck and the very first copy goes on like somebody's Legolas or Haldir or whoever. And then the second copy goes on one of my guys. It'll usually go on Aristor. And then by the end of the game, Aristor is like swinging for some absurd attack because Legolas has been building up those counters the whole game. And then eventually I draw into the second copy and I stick it on my guy. And then suddenly Aristor is just this total beast. But it's so long story short, Aristor is awesome for the metagame because it opens up so many weird, interesting decks that who would have thought that Keeping Count would be this totally viable thing? You know, it just, it's fun to see that.
Yeah, I definitely would echo most of what Dan is saying, that the Noldor are really fun. And I like the way when you play them, you feel like you're playing Noldor, you know, like cards in hand always represented knowledge to me. And so you're kind of trading in this knowledge that stretches back thousands of years in exchange for these kind of cool effects. So that definitely makes sense to me in terms of theme. The thing I like about both the Noldor, especially Aristor, and the Dunedain, the two new traits of the cycle, is for a long time I've been saying I really like cards that give you an advantage but also a disadvantage, and both these traits do that, I think. Especially the Dunedain, because engaging enemies is in itself like a potentially a bad thing. Like even if you're set up in a good place, one bad shadow effect without cancellation can really ruin your day. Yeah. So I really love the Dunedain for that reason. It's like, yeah, you're gonna get good stuff, but you're playing with fire, and I like playing with fire, I guess. So they appeal to me in that sense. That's the same reason why I like Grima. Same concept, you know. Particularly Aristor is kind of similar. Like if you build a really good Aristor deck, then discarding cards at the end of your hand is probably not the hugest deal. But you still have decisions to make along the way. Especially at first, you're gonna get stuck with times where, you know, I can't play everything, so what am I going to play? And all those things just equal interesting decisions to make during the game, which I like. So both of those new archetypes are really fun. We've kind of been focusing on player cards, but I did want to mention kind of my expectations for the cycle. We're just being very excited about exploring this region, the north of Middle Earth, because I remember reading Lord of the Rings as a kid, and you get all those hints of like strange ruins on the hills and these little glimpses of the past that are really intriguing and you want to know more about them. But it's kind of like in especially old school video games where you would try to run off to explore something and then you hit that invisible wall and you're like, damn, I want to see what's on the other side. And in Tolkien, it's a lot like that intentionally, where he has these little glimpses on the edges, but you can't go past it. And so that's one of the things I really appreciate about playing this game and the non-saga stuff, is because it kind of gives us a chance to go out there and explore what, you know, you wanted to see but didn't get to see in the books. So the North was always really intriguing to me, so it was mm-hmm. cool to get to explore that.
I want to talk about that too. I'm going to jump ahead, because in just a second we're going to talk about our favorite quest. This one was not on the list, but yesterday I was playing Dreadrealm, and it was so evil. It was so meta. I loved it, because I was very conflicted, because I was extremely irritated because my Ents were getting killed by ghosts. But I was also enjoying it so much because you just have this sense of just being harassed by these spirits, because, you know, you're getting possessed. And there's that brilliantly titled card, Death and Calamity, which just sounds like the most Tolkien thing ever, which is like just this impending doom. And then these guys are coming back, and the art has all these candles and the Altar of Midwinter. First of all, again, that's another well-named card. Good job. And then the art is just so creepy. I didn't think, because sometimes I get, all right, this is becoming longer than I anticipated. So I was very pleased to be spiritually abused and attacked I was going through the basements of Carn Doom with Ents, of course. Shall we go ahead and talk about our favorite quests of the cycles? One cycle.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Dan, you're in the hot seat. What's your favorite quest and why? Go.
Oh, it's far and away. It's across the Etten Moors, and I know that some people have commented like, "Oh, that quest is too easy." But I think it is one of the best examples to me of just hitting the perfect mix of mechanics and narrative, and the way that it plays out. Actually, like all of the cards in that quest make sense when you think about it in terms of the narrative, and I think that's such a huge win. For example, the first time we played it multiplayer, I want to say that we had a safe location out, but we're like, oh, let's wait on that, and then, you know, everyone goes in questing, and we get a bunch of weather, and we just get wiped out. And it was such a beautiful moment, because you realize, like, oh, that's what that cave was for. Like, if we go into the cave, we don't get hit, you know, our heroes don't get hit on the head by lightning, and all our allies don't get washed away, and maybe we're going to survive this. So it's just, it was such a cool moment where, like, the mechanics didn't feel mechanical at that point, right? Like, that's the best, I think, in this game, is when the game itself kind of falls into the background, and really you feel the sense of you're actually, you know, going through this story and facing these challenges. And it's not just, you know, I mean, it's one of the things I know Matthew's complained about in the past, is like, for him, the game gets stale when it feels like, you know, exhaust your guys, quest and go. And I agree with him on that. And I think the best quests really take the mechanical aspects and hide them. And you're in that moment of thinking about, like, okay, do I go into this cave to protect my guys from the bad weather? Am I prepared to take down this giant troll, or do I wait? Like, all these decisions become meaningful in terms of the narrative. And I feel like safe locations was such a great idea. And that quest to me is always fun. And it's kind of a go-to with multiplayer, just because it doesn't matter what decks people bring. Like, a lot of the most important decisions you make are, you know, tactical ones around when you travel and, you know, when you engage certain enemies and how you deal with managing the damage on your characters, because there's a lot of interaction that the enemies have with how much damage your characters have. And it's a really, really interesting, well-designed quest.
Ian, what do you think, man? What's your favorite quest of the cycle?
It was a tough one to pick for me, and I almost picked Carn Doom, actually, because I am a self-admitted masochist in this game. But I did really enjoy Battle of Carn Doom. But I'm going to pick Dreadrealm. Dreadrealm just nicks it, in my opinion, because the story and the mechanics are just so cinematic to me, is the best way to describe it. Like you were mentioning earlier, Derek, you do feel like you're getting harassed, and all these, there's just lots of interesting mechanics in there, like your allies getting possessed, you know, and deciding whether you're going to get rid of this one enemy, because if you do, then it's going to attach to one of your characters. And, you know, speaking of decisions, there's a lot of decisions like that in that quest that make it so that combat isn't just a matter of, you know, am I going to kill it? Yeah, of course I'm going to kill it. You know, Dread Realm is a quest where it's a little bit different. Am I going to kill it? I'm not sure. So it introduces that kind of wrinkle.
And in some cases, if you want to get your reanimated cards back in your discard so you could possibly get them out, you got to kill it.
Right, right. And yeah, the reanimation, you know, you can get fun story moments where, you know, Gandalf becomes a zombie or,
<That's terrifying.
laughs> or whoever else.
Zombie Gandalf is terrifying. Yeah,
zombie Gandalf a fast zombie or a slow zombie?
Definitely a fast one, in my opinion. You know? and you have that moment where you have like tears rolling down your cheek as you have to put them down.
That's why I don't peek at the card. I just put it straight in the
play. Yeah, they're just all zombies.
I don't even want to look who it is. Oh, it's just Jordan Garner.
I love that you said put him down like Gandalf is a dog and you take him to the vet. It's like, well, it's been a good 2,000 years, Gandalf. But
it's your time to go.
It's your time to go.
Yeah, and the boss fight in that quest, the thing I appreciate about that boss fight and a lot of the other boss fights recently is that they're not just like a ton of hit points and defense values on the boss, but there's something different. In this case, it's like the sorcery out that's going to cancel the damage, so you have to kind of work around that and fight your way through.
Well, he's still got a dozen hit points.
Well, yeah, but it's not like a Smaug or Balrog, right? Yeah, so it feels a little bit different. And then the final stage, because I play each quest blind the first time, can totally catch you by surprise. And then all of a sudden, it's like the whole dungeon, the whole place is collapsing and you have to escape. And I got smashed the first time, which was sad, But yeah, it definitely gives you that feeling of like, okay, just go all out and run for it and forget about everything else. So yeah,
cool.
Just the kind of different stages of the quest work together, like some scenes from a movie, and you work your way through it. And so that's why Dread Realm is my favorite for that reason.
Another thing I like about that quest is the sorcery attachments stay on the quest from stage, or at least from stage 1 to 2.
Right.
It gives it more of that feel of you're being haunted, less than just this arbitrary thing that's happening. It really feels like, you know, these fell spirits are following you around.
Yeah, I want to second something that you said, Ian. I think it's really important for me, and Dread Realm is probably my second favorite of the cycle, so I'm definitely with you on a lot of the things you said. But one of the things in particular that I like that's a recent trend in the game is that the boss enemies feel a lot more unique. Mm-hmm. I feel like in the past some of them suffered from a ton of hit points and huge attack, but you know, you would just kind of get an army of dudes and then eventually be able to overwhelm the boss enemy. And I like seeing some of the more recent ones where, as you pointed out, there's wrinkles to them. Like they might have damage prevention, or they might have some other narrative goal that you have to fulfill before you can damage them. Or it makes it more interesting to me that each of the bosses starts to feel more and more unique. And it's cool in video games when the bosses are all very distinct and you have to solve the puzzle of how do I beat this boss before you actually go about doing it. And I like that the game is getting more and more in that way.
My favorite for the cycle was definitely Escape from Mount Graham, mostly because I had the most enjoyable multiplayer experience with that quest. I said in the previous episode that was kind of the last one that I really got to sink my teeth into before I took a one-way ticket to Babytown. which is a great place to be, but there's not a lot of time for gaming in Babytown. And the feeling was, I'm never going to get out of this flipping dungeon. I'm going to die here, and I'm going to want to set these cards on fire. This is Carn Doom. This is Escape from Dol Guldur all over again. And then things slowly started to pick up, and I like discovered Gandalf, or one big ally. And then I got out and I got to bust my friend out of jail. And pretty soon we've amassed this army of allies that are inexplicably like in all these nooks and crannies of this little mountain. And then we kill all the orcs. And it was just this very satisfying buildup from being stuck in a cage to
with nothing
right, to amassing an army. Who drew the parallel to not Skyrim, but one of those games where you're in jail and you have nothing, and you go from that to kicking butt. And yeah. So choo choo. So I lost my train of thought.
Oh, that was terrible.
Get out.
So that was my favorite for that reason, because we played it twice and the exact same thing happened to my friend, who was playing with us, who hadn't tried it before. He's like, this quest sucks. I hate this quest. And then all of a sudden we're helping each other out and we bust out, and it's a very, satisfying experience.
Yeah. I love Escape from Mount Graham. It's definitely another one of my favorites. And I know some people were saying that it was easy on the easier side, which is true compared to some of the other quests in the cycle, but it really doesn't bother me because in this case, it's just so interesting that, it adds a lot of replayability to it because mm-hmm. you can create these interesting challenges for yourself too. Like when it was out, on Tales from the Cards Facebook, I was kind of challenging people to the fatty challenge, like fatty start challenge. With fatty and break your way out with just fatty.
Yes.
So those are the kind of things you can do with a quest like that, which makes it really interesting. And sometimes you don't want to play like the Battle of Karn Doom or something smashing you. Sometimes you just want to, you know, get some cards on the table and have some enjoyment. And that is what that quest is to me. And yeah, and for whatever reason, whenever I've played video game RPGs, those there's a lot of different games that do this where you get captured and get all your stuff taken away. It's kind of a trope by this point, but those are always Chrono Trigger is a good example. I think The Witcher 2 did that recently. You know, there's tons of games, some of the Final Fantasy games, and it's just like, always one of my favorite moments because it's like, oh crap, all that cool gear I had is gone. Like, how am I going to get to it? And like, you know, usually I'm like, forget rescuing my friends. Where's my gear at?
Where's my sword?
Where's my sword at? And, there's just lots of moments in there. There's the side quests where you have to stop the executioners, which I remember from Gen Con, because I failed to stop the executioners and all my friends were killed and I raised my threat by like 15 or something. But, just a very memorable quest for sure.
Yeah. And
so as you were fleeing the mountain, you had to have like a moment of silence for all your fallen comrades.
Sorry, dude.
It's as I'm hugging my gear.
It's another one of those examples where the mechanics kind of slip away into the narrative. So it's a good one. So let's talk about our least favorite quests. We'll go in the same order here. Dan, which one was just making you go into a bear rage?
So I have to give this caveat, because I have a feeling that the one that I'm about to name could eventually, given that I hopefully will have free time at some point again in my life, become one of my favorites. But because back in Heirs of Numenor, Into Ithilien utterly, utterly crushed me the first several times I played it, and now it is one of my absolute favorite quests. But that was back when I had time to like tune decks to beat a scenario. I no longer have that kind of time these days. But right now, for me, my least favorite of the cycle is Battle of Karn Doom, for that exact reason, is that it is punishingly hard for all of my existing decks, and I honestly have yet to have time to sit down and really craft a deck to beat it. And I know, I am convinced that like Into Ithilien, it's the kind of quest that is beatable, and I might even at some point, either through Stockholm Syndrome or just legitimately, come to love it. But right now it is so frustrating to me because I've played it probably, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 times and been just stomped, like utterly, completely stomped every single time. So I'm sure that it's that the decks that I'm bringing just aren't a good fit. But for right now, it is amazing in theory, but it is incredibly frustrating.
I'll go ahead and hitch my horse to that gripe train so we don't have to hear it twice. Mine is definitely Karn Doom for everything you're saying. I've only played it once and it mopped the floor with me. So hopefully, like you, Dan, I will come to love it. So our special guest today is co-lead developer of the game and, well, our favorite lead developer of the game, Matt Newman. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I am great. We're very pleased to be talking with you. Thanks for taking the time to be on the show.
Thanks for taking double the time because I totally messed up on the audio earlier.
Oh, that's all right. We did have some audio issues, but we're gonna talk to Matt now about Angmar Awakened and his thoughts as a developer now that the cycle's over, and we're gonna talk about the Dream Chaser, which is just about to come out. Everybody's very excited about it. So let's start with talking about the beginnings of the Angmar Awakened cycle. What were your guys' design goals for this cycle? Talking specifically about player cards. Rangers were a big part. We love the Rangers. We said that already. So talk about that, and then maybe even talk about how you guys plan these things out. I know we'd love to hear your process.
Yeah, definitely. So, as far as the player cards are concerned, Caleb had some major goals for the Dúnedain. I think they're definitely his favorite faction. And he really wanted them to be proactive and going out of their way, because they're the ones who are really going out of their way to protect people and hunt down the enemy. Yeah, so they're all about engaging enemies, and I think we did a really good, or I think Caleb did a really good job of designing those cards so that people are excited to engage enemies and combo off of all of their other effects and really kind of feel like the badass of the group, really, yeah. In a 3 or 4 player game. And of course, Scorpagorn, as people like to call him, sort of the hallmark of that effect. And then I really wanted to kind of give the Noldor a new strategy, something to call their own. Because a lot of the Noldor cards that existed in the past were just good cards. Nothing bad about them, but nothing unique either.
It kind of the highlights were super powerful, right? Like yeah. Elrond and Arwen.
Yeah, Elrond, Arwen, like standalone cards. Like all really good cards. So we wanted to provide them with some kind of synergy and really make like a strategy that they can call their own. So we were talking about before, I'm sure, Aristor and the new Arwen hero being the hallmarks of that strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also kind of threw some other curveballs in there. I really wanted to do something with the victory display. And Rossiel, as we talked about before, is great for that because she enables you to do some really wacky shenanigans, and I like that it's a really subtle strategy where you might not at first realize how powerful it is until you've eliminated some of the hardest cards in the deck.
Yeah, and then she reaps the benefits of that too, since double whammy.
Yeah, and there's nothing more satisfying than a well-timed "the door is closed."
Yeah.
<In my opinion. laughs>
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's for the player cards, and then, you know, of course, always we want to unify like other existing strategies and give like throw some bones to some deck archetypes that existed before the cycle. As far as how we plan things out, I was talking about this before, so I'm gonna go through it again because I think you guys found it really interesting. But the Angmar cycle started off with a high level concept meeting between myself, Caleb, and Christian Peterson, the CEO. We kind of sat down. We always knew that we were gonna go to Angmar. But we sat down and kind of mapped out everything from a high-level perspective, story-wise. Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? What things are we going to see? And why? And from there, it was my job and Caleb's job to craft a story that wove through all those locations and made sense. We always knew that we were going to have some Dúnedain of our own design in there, because really mm-hmm. the only Dúnedain that we're introduced to in The Lord of the Rings is Halbarad and Aragorn. So right. There needed to be more. So we made, at first they didn't have names, they were just the mentor Dúnedain and the other kid.
Dúnedain 1, Dúnedain 2.
Yeah, well, I think Iarion was decided pretty early on because we started working on the Lost Realm. And Amarthiel doesn't really appear in the Lost Realm except in story text. And then from there, I kind of took that and ran with it with Amarthiel. And I think pretty early on, I said, let's make him a hero. Because we knew we wanted more Dúnedain heroes. So it was like, yeah, let's make this guy a hero. That'll be awesome. And I think
plus, it was interesting just because sometimes they can be like the hireling in an RPG or just like the arbitrary NPC character where these objective allies are just kind of there for narrative purposes or mechanical purposes. But changing him up so that he bounces around with engagement was very Dúnedain-y and also very useful.
Yeah, I wanted players to actually like Amarthiel, not just as a person, but as a card. So that when they yeah. when he eventually came around as a hero, they weren't like, oh, this guy. They were like, oh, awesome, this guy. Yeah, he saved my life.
Wasn't like, a Nalir hero.
Well, yeah. Well, that's a different story. Now I want to make a Nalir hero.
Awesome. Oh, man. It could be his... Make him Nalur. It could be his brother or something. Who doesn't suck?
Well, what's Nalir backwards? Lan.
Lan.
The only thing that I would do with a Nalir hero is use Fall of Gil-galad to sacrifice threat reduction.
That's awesome.
He's like Grima, but
so, worst. Right. Let's talk about the quests for a minute. Which do you feel hit the... We talked earlier about our favorites. Which one do you feel hits the intention or the mark most closely? Or I'll give you another two-pronged question. Which one came out in an unexpectedly fun way? Like maybe your initial idea deviated through the design process. So first, which one do you feel hit your intention the most closely?
For sure, Escape from Mount Graham. It's also my favorite quest in the cycle. Right off the bat, I knew I wanted this quest to be special, and I knew I wanted to hit a very specific theme. We talked about it earlier, but basically this kind of video gamey. I got captured, all my equipment's gone, all my allies are gone. Now I gotta free myself and really do so using only my wit and my will. And I think that's really interesting. So what I really wanted to do is design this quest where players read the setup and they go, what? Like, how am I supposed to do this? I've got one guy, we're all separated, all of my allies are gone, this is impossible. And then they play it, and then, you know, sometimes they lose right out hand, but most of the time, they win. And they say, oh wow, that was a great journey, I actually managed to pull that off. And I think that that quest actually went through... It went through some iteration, to be sure, but it went pretty well, the design process. It wasn't... I expected it to be, like, really tough to develop, and it ended up just working out pretty well. You know, sometimes that just happens as part of the process. You kind of, like, get it right pretty early, or at least, you know, get it right as far as I was concerned. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that quest.
That's cool.
Definitely. So then the other question, right? Yes.
Yes.
I think the quest that changed the most throughout the process was the Battle of Carn Doom.
So it started off as an enjoyable sleigh ride and turned into hell on earth.
A romp through. Carn
no, actually, to be completely honest, I always wanted it to be a monster, and that was partly due to the story. Like, we outlined the story pretty early on, and when we got to this part in the story, I was like, all right, they're going to assault Carn Doom. And kind of looked at each other and was like, that sounds like suicide, right? Like, it sounds like a terrible idea. You know, they have just a few elves and a few rangers, and now we're talking about Carn Doom, like one of the biggest, baddest, worst places in Middle Earth outside of Mordor. So right off the bat, I knew this was going to be the tough quest in the cycle. Like, the difficulty 8+ quest. But aside from that, I wasn't really sure at first what it was going to be about. And it wasn't until, I want to say, the fifth or sixth different version or iteration of the quest that I realized that the thing that was most crucial for the quest and the thing that was most fun was Thawrdir. And it was this idea that, like, we've fought him twice before, he's really memorable, like, him attacking every time a sorcery is revealed is very memorable, annoying, but memorable. And so I wanted to focus in on that and say, like, let's make this quest about him. Let's make it the you know, defeating him is the ultimate goal, and when you do it, you breathe a final sigh of relief as you think back and you realize that you never have to fight him ever again unless you want to. So that's when we came up with the flipping mechanic, where there was two different versions of Thawrdir and he flipped back and forth. Which actually worked out really well. Like, it was very fortuitous that we were able to do that, because at the time that I thought of that, we had already commissioned all the art. The art for one of the two sides of Thawrdir was actually meant for a different card. But it worked out really well. Interesting.
I thought that was a good move thematically, too, because, you know, Thawrdir is evocative of the Witch King. Of course, and so we see the two sides of the Witch King in the stories. We see the Black Rider, who's there just to sneak around and see what he can see, and then we see him revealed in power at the end when he's leading the armies out of Minas Morgul. So that's what the two sides kind of made me think of, the two different sides of this wraith who can be very creepy and sorceress and also a warrior.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad that shone through, too, because we always knew that we weren't going to put the Witch King in the cycle, because he's not there at the time. Like, in our timeline,
right.
He's not there. Very early on, we said, all right, we're not going to do the Witch King. What are we going to do, like, villain-wise? We need someone who's going to kind of take his place. And so Thawrdir was that. So I'm glad that he became a really kind of a hateable card, in a way. Because, he needed to be, really, to fill the Witch King's boots.
Definitely. As a character and as a mechanical game thing.
I wish we could have gotten artwork of Old Man. Old Man, not a Wraith Thaurdir.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be in a different cycle. We could do his backstory.
His backstory.
So let's, all right, let's see. Do we want to do the wrap-up or we want to jump ahead to Dream Chaser? Let's jump ahead to Dream Chaser. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's fine. Although, actually, I talked about... I don't actually know if I got the chance to talk about my favorite player card, so I'm gonna
oh, yeah, we didn't do
that
really
quickly. Because you guys got to talk about how cool Aristor is, but I didn't.
Yeah, tell us about your favorite player card.
It's Aristor. Surprise, surprise! No, I really like how Aristor turned out, and he's a card that when I designed, I wrote that down, I typed it into the computer, and I sat back for a minute, and I looked at it, and I was like, that's never going to survive playtesting. Like, someone's going to break it, and I'm just going to have to change it. So I came up with, like, three different alternatives for him. But
tell us, what are some of the alternatives? We gotta get the exclusive on that.
I'm not
going to
tell you, because some of them might still appear as cards. One of them is Galdor. The new Galdor. So,
oh, okay, cool.
But then when I liked that alternative so much that I just slapped it on Galdor when I was done with Aristor. But anyway, Aristor ended up surviving through all the playtesting. Everybody really enjoyed him. Nobody really... Even though there were many shenanigans, none of the shenanigans were so overpowered that I was forced to change the ability. And in fact, it was my my coworker and friend Brad, Brad Angies, who's the lead developer of Conquest, I was like, I don't know, man, maybe I should change it. So many cards. And he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Matt, if you change Aristor, I will kill you. He loves Aristor nice. That much. He nice. Actually, he wanted to put a card in Conquest called the Aristor Protocol that did it.
That's cool. Nice.
That's cool. But yeah, he won't play Lord of the Rings without Aristor anymore.
Wow.
We designed a deck. I was like, all right, let's break Aristor. And I designed a deck that I like to call the Brute Force Vomit deck, where every turn you just collect as many... It was Aristor, Glowin, and Hirluin. And you just collect as many resources as physically possible, and then just bleh, every card that you draw onto the table.
Nice.
That's great. And it was fun.
Yeah, Blunt Force Vomit's also my favorite band, coincidentally.
Yeah.
That's great. Now I'm going to go build that deck now. That's so exciting.
That's a good deck.
That's awesome. All right, well, any other closing thoughts on Angmar Awakened before we look forward?
Closing thoughts for me? Yeah. I think overall what we want to do with this game, more than anything, is to tell a story that can conceivably have happened in Tolkien's world. And it's such an honor that I get to do that. And I really hope that everybody enjoyed the story that was told in Angmar Awakened as much as they enjoyed the cards and the challenge, because that's something that I really, really like about this community, is that I'm seeing threads not just about, oh, this card is really good, or look at this deck that I built, but also, like, hey, guys, how do you think, you know, are we going to get to see Dekanar? Like, that kind of thing. I really, really love that's a thing in this game, that we get to tell a story with spoilers, you know what I mean, in cards. And I hope that people like that, because the Dream Chaser cycle is all about that.
Definitely. And I in our previous episode, we talked about how important theme is to this game and how it often can interfere with building decks that are the most effective, because you want to play the cards that you enjoy. And Matadago commented, I believe it was on Facebook, about how re-emphasizing that point by saying, like, nobody in Netrunner is talking about, like, how, oh, Haas Byroid, they would not have this kind of ice or whatever. Nobody's talking about that in Netrunner. You probably get some of that with Conquest, because people love their 40k factions. So it's good to know that you guys care that much about it as well. One thing you'd said before Audacity exploded and we had our audio issues was that you really enjoyed writing the fiction for Rossiel. And so I know a lot of the developers, I'm sure, care about their intellectual property and their fiction, but it's very cool that you not only enjoy designing cards, but enjoying the designing the characters as well, because they're so important to the world.
I mentioned this before, but I wanted to bring it up again now, Jyn Rossiel. The moment for me when I realized how important it was and how much how much of an honor it is that I'm able to like write this kind of fiction is when I sat down with a stranger in the event center and I was playing with him and he was running a Rossiel deck and he called her Nineth. And I just thought that was so awesome.
That's
that
cool.
I just wanted to kind of shout out to that person.
Totally.
Yeah, I'd have to say that Ingmar Awaken was definitely the tightest narrative we've seen so far, and just like the most developed story.
Awesome,
for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I did get a kick out of seeing people on the forums like, "What do you think's gonna happen to Amarthiel by the end of it? You know, like, is he gonna become like another Lord Alcoron and turncoat?
So
there's that kind of speculation,
which
is right, yeah. So it was cool seeing that kind of like speculation, like you would see with a TV series or book or something. Yeah,
it's great that you guys are pushing the narrative because I feel like for a lot of players, certainly for myself, the big appeal of getting into this game to begin with was the setting of Middle Earth and Tolkien's writings. So it's appropriate that you guys would focus so much on the narrative when that is what brought a lot of players to this game.
Yeah, definitely. Early on, I think a lot of people, not to anyone's fault, would open up the pack and just start playing without reading the story. And I thought that was such a shame, and I really wanted to encourage people to read the story, and that the best way to do that is to present them with a story that they want to read. So I hope that that shines through, and I hope that that continues to in the Dream Chaser cycle.
Speaking of Dream Chaser cycle... Let's hoist the sails here.
Yeah.
And I think what we're going to do is... Oh, man. I'm going to start making a list for the subsequent episodes.
You can just take from our all of our marketing articles.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's good. I'm not above ripping off other people's jokes. All right. So let's start by talking about how we, the non-developers, feel about the cycle and what we're looking forward to. And then we'll hear from Matt about... the team's goals for this cycle. So Ian and Dan, what are you guys hoping for with this cycle besides we cut that part out. I was going to say besides bears on boats. I'm not going to steal Dan's thunder. So what are we hoping for with this cycle?
I can dream, but it would be great to see bears on boats. It's we now know from some of the spoilers that Dale is going to get some attention, so I can hold out my slimmest of hopes that Bjornings get a little bit of attention. But honestly, I think it's probably going to be Noldor, and I'm very happy with that because it is one of my favorite factions. So that's my more realistic goal is to see some Noldor love in this cycle.
Bjorning captain, I can see that. Ian.
For me, I'm just like ridiculously excited for this cycle because ships and like pirates and all that kind of stuff is one of my favorite themes in games and stories. So just knowing that we're going to get to sail around these boats and, fight these people who are trying to board our ships, that's pretty much, what I want out of the cycle, and looks like that's what we're going to get. So yeah, I'm super happy already and I can't wait to get my hands on it.
My expectations and hopes are a lot more broad because I'm really just looking forward to seeing what you guys have come up with. Rossiel was the unexpected highlight of mine for the last cycle because I was just was not expecting that kind of curveball in terms of player mechanics. And so I'm excited to see what you guys have come up with. That's going to surprise me this cycle as well. So what am I going to be surprised by, Matt Newman?
So as far as player cards, we had a couple major themes. I'm sure you've noticed from all the spoilers and all the articles that a big theme is going to be cards that encourage the players as a group to spend resources, and even across spheres. Like a leadership card that spends tactics resources that anyone can pay for, that kind of thing. So there's basically one of those for every combination of spheres that you can think of. Which is a good deal of the... I mean, that's about a fourth of the player cards, or so. So you can expect a lot of those, and you can also expect a lot of things that play with just the nature of resources. I always, when I got into this game, I loved the fact that the resources are on the heroes. And so I wanted to do more with that, with just the resources being actually in a specific person's resource pool and just not floating around. So you can definitely expect some more stuff with that as well. And also just some high-cost characters, because I think Over the course of the game, one thing that people have noticed is that just having lots of dudes is good. So I want to shake that up a little bit and introduce maybe decks that only have a few allies, but those allies are just like bomb allies.
I'm excited about that because that's my favorite kind of deck to build, and that often bites me in the rear because I don't plan accordingly. So it's nice to know that that's going to be a focus,
and there'll definitely be a lot of support for that that sort of deck. So I'm looking forward to that a lot. As far as the encounters and the story goes, again, our goal is to tell a story that could conceivably happen in Middle-earth. So what's interesting about this cycle is that we wanted to do something different, something that players wouldn't expect, and obviously the way that we do that is by putting them in a boat in the middle of the ocean. but also, I wanted to stress that this is still very much Lord of the Rings, and this is still very much Middle-earth and Tolkien's world. And so the things that you're going to be doing, the places that you're going to be exploring, and really the player's ultimate goal in the story for this cycle is something that could definitely happen in Middle-earth. And it's not just... Pirates of the Caribbean with elves, because that would have been, I think, right, a disservice to the world. But I think players will really enjoy the story, or at least I hope so.
Yeah,
you have an island made of cards. I'm already on board.
That looks amazing.
I think one of the things we've harped on the Great Company endlessly is like locations and make them more interesting and do things differently. And you know, that quest is an example of that for sure. And also the, I can't remember the quest name off the top of my head, but the underwater temple, and that's doing something interesting with locations as well. The Drowned Ruins, right? Yeah. So
there's a quest with the double-sided locations that I think players will really enjoy. So
nice. I love double-sided cards.
Anytime you flip a card, that's fun.
I can't get it.
That's my motto.
Yeah,
totally. The major, if there was like one major theme for this whole cycle, it's exploration. So making the travel phase more important was a big goal of mine. So you guys can let me know if that worked.
Oh, we will.
Yeah, totally.
You're back on Twitter now. True. So I'm going to be bugging you.
We'll love to have you on for a follow-up maybe later into the cycle, and we can talk about some of these quests after.
I am on Twitter, by the way. It's at Natsunoyoru, which is NatsunoYoru. So follow me.
Nice.
Are you Matt Newman on there or Aiden Newman?
Kind of a pen name.
Okay, cool. And he's, so if you... Whatever. You spelled it. I'm not going to talk about it.
Yeah, I just have to say, because I know you you guys talked about on a previous episode the issue of people kind of having some issues with the whole nautical boat theme, but now that Matt is mentioning it, because it drives me crazy when people complain about that. Like, I could partially understand it, but I start getting a little enraged just because... If you look back, especially at some of the first stage stuff, like love of the ocean and ships is huge to Tolkien. Like, read Unfinished Tales and Tuor's Story and all of that. And like, the ocean plays such a huge role. Like, the whole reason why Morgoth was destroyed was because of an ocean voyage, you know, like Rendil sailing across the ocean. So the idea that it is somehow foreign to Tolkien, when people say that, it just, you know, I just want to like... smash through my wall like
perfect,
a Kool-Aid,
man. To be perfectly honest, anyone that thinks that nautical doesn't have a place, like a core place in Tolkien's narrative, just hasn't read their Silmarillion.
Right.
It's really what it comes down to.
Numenor, man, which of course is what the story of the cycle is tied to, but it's like Tolkien had a recurring Atlantis dream and a tidal wave dream and made a story out of it. That's pretty not as nautical
as you
can get.
I'm not
going
to go so far as to say that every player should read the Silmarillion. But
the Insomniac players, maybe they should.
Well, I mean, maybe before they gripe about narrative, discord, they should.
Well, I think
guess
there's
my take on it.
But you guys don't have the rights to the Silmarillion, so we won't.
I think there's a very valid concern. You know, when things go in a direction that people aren't expecting, and I was expecting that to a degree.
Right.
But I'm just here to reassure people that this is very much going to be Lord of the Rings, you know, on boats.
You're a lot nicer than we are. That's good.
So speaking of the Dream Chaser cycle, do you guys want to hear about a card?
Great segue. I would love to hear about a card.
Okay.
I think it's
I'm
going
to send you the card later, probably when I get back to the office. But for now, I'll just read it. So this card comes from the latest spoiled pack, the Drowned Ruins. So it's a bit of a ways off, but I figured this would be an exciting card to talk about because the article in which we announced the Drowned Ruins talks about support for decks with only two heroes. So I thought you guys might like this. Also fits with the Gray Company in general. So this card is a one-cost neutral title called Strider. Yup.
What?
Attached to a hero.
I'm so excited.
Attached to anyone. While you control two or fewer heroes, attached hero does not exhaust to commit to the quest. While you control five or fewer characters, attached hero gets +2 willpower.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
That's so awesome.
It is unique.
It's unique, right? Okay. So I can't
there can be only one Strider.
That's fantastic.
Well, that's so perfect because, you know, there's all these different versions of Aragorn, and people like to call Loragorn Strider because he's got his hood up and stuff. So I'm just so glad that Strider has been saved for such an awesome.
Yeah, and of course, you don't have to attach it to Aragorn, too. But that what's cool about that is it opens up a lot of deck possibilities. In which you could really, it's kind of like its own little Light of Valinor with an extra willpower boost if you're running only a handful of characters. And that's important to me because I wanted options for secrecy decks that don't just want to dump tons of allies onto the table. Which, while totally valid, is if you want to play a deck where it's just here's my four hobbits and that's it, here you go. Like there's a perfect card for it.
There's cool space there too for maybe like Sylvan, for example, where you can have stuff where they're leaving play at the right time to give a bonus, because if you could have more than five, and then if you bounce some at the right time, then
definitely
your hero gets the bonus. So I like that there's space
also
there to play with it.
Well, imagine turn one Kierdan questing for free six. That's bonkers.
It doesn't have an attached to restriction, so you can attach it even if you have more than three heroes, and then let's say you call Dara, and now you have two or fewer heroes. So, yeah, there's a lot of play.
Nice. That's great.
Man, that's cool. I know we're not supposed to talk about art on the radio here, but
I'll send you a copy of the card when I get back to the office, but it's pretty much Aragorn leaning up against the building and Bree being all cool and mysterious. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, we will definitely put that up on the show notes and all over the social media.
No problem.
Man, thanks for sharing that. That's a real pump up.
Yeah, super exciting. I know on the Discord channel, which if people haven't joined the Discord channel, they should, because we do have lots of discussions on there. Card Where the Ring started it. Matt himself shows up on there from time to time. But we were recently discussing the whole issue of secrecy and you know, it's viable, but the main viable decks of secrecy are just pumping out a big army. And a lot of people, myself included, wishing for secrecy decks that kind of reflect that, you know, this small group is going to try to, you know, infiltrate and do that kind of thing. So that card is right
along
those lines.
Awesome. Glad you guys are excited for it. There's another card in the cycle that's going to help a lot for that, too. So look forward to that.
All right, cool. Yeah, so guys, anything else you want to talk about before I do the closer?
No, this was a lot of fun. Hopefully we can do it again.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. Hopefully my audio won't... Well, hopefully my audio actually records the next time we do this. I do want to be a part of your book club at some point. Yeah, at some point.
Okay.
Oh.
Definitely, yeah. So we've obviously got a ways to go. We haven't touched book club in a while, so we'll get you on there. Is there a particular part you love so much? I know I think you emailed it to me. What is your favorite part that you might be interested in talking about?
My favorite parts are all going to be later on, like in Return of the King, so I'm not going to make you wait that long. But I generally will enjoy anything post-Rivendell. So once you get to Rivendell, go for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
We'll give you a call. Matt Newman, thanks so much for being on the show, man. We appreciate it.
I'm really sorry that I murdered our recording earlier.
Oh, that's quite all right. I think this turned out just fine. I think all the listeners are going
to
enjoy it.
And looking forward to people's reactions to the Grey Havens.
I'm looking forward to Strider, so I think I'm just going to go ahead and proxy a copy as soon as
I'm not
spoiler. Well, this has been episode 36 of the Great Company Podcast, brought to you by our patrons. If you like what we do on the show and want to support our contests, hosting fees, and travel expenses, please head to patreon.com/grayco to sign up. Extra special thank yous to James D, Matt S, and Trolls S, our latest to join the Hobbitry in Arms. And as we all know, Gen Con season is ramping up, so keep an eye out for more contests and incentives, really any way to get you to give us money so we can go to Gen Con. Speaking of contests, Ian, you've had a particular giveaway going with an incredible looking box that I think you actually got at Gen Con. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's a very cool kind of wooden puzzle box. It's called a puzzle box, not because it's going to take you like 5 hours to figure out how to open it. although it might take you a couple minutes, but just the way it's constructed, there's a couple of pieces. This is something handcrafted I got from a booth at Gen Con, so it's not something you can just find online somewhere. And the map of Middle Earth is etched on the top of it. You can use it. I've used it to hold tokens for the game. You could use it to hold some other accessories or whatever, your piggy bank, I don't know, something along those lines, but it's very cool. So we're going to give that away to one of our, patrons as kind of a thank you for supporting us.
Okay. When you said puzzle box, it made me think of Hellraiser. So we have to give the caveat that whichever listener wins this is not going to have to go to the paint.
We are not responsible for any transportation to hell dimensions that may result in.
That was not us.
I'm responsible for that.
Newman!
Okay, so I have used a handy random generator from among our list of current patrons, and the winner is Matt Delano. Hopefully I'm pronouncing your name right. So please get in contact with us. Send us your address so I can send that off to you. Congrats.
Outstanding. Congratulations, Matt. All these Matts.
Yeah.
So many Matts.
Well, whether or not you are a winner, you can find us on all your favorite social media outlets, which are linked on our website at greatcompanypodcast.com. From there, you can connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and so on. Please send your emails to thegreatcompanypodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to talk about whatever you really want to talk about. You can also contact us through Patreon. There is a messenger on that you can contact us with. We had an interesting discussion about custom cards on there this week. As always, thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
See you.
Yeah,
I just assumed with Caldera that she's like a black Numenorean necromancer or something, right? I mean, that's how you explain the ability.
That's how I read the card. Yeah.
She just splits in half and transforms into two. She's a changeling. That's so,
Matthew missed our Star Trek reference. Yeah, that was amazing.
We always have to have at least one per episode. That's the requirement. But